Welcome to Inside the Mortgage Mind, a Zenix podcast where you'll hear stories from professionals throughout the industry, from new LOs to CEOs, about their journey to achieving success. We hope these stories inspire and energize you to take your business to the next level.
Stephen A. Milner, Casey Cunningham, how have you been?
Well, I'm doing outstanding, Casey. Thanks so much for including me in this interview, and I've been looking forward to it.
Listen, you know what I just love about you right this moment? You are in a suit and tie, yes. Right? You hadn't wavered a bit on your standards, have you?
No, I wear a suit and tie every day, you know, and I still want to, you know, try to maintain a normal environment, even though, you know, we have in my corporate office in Melville, we have about 150 people, but maybe seven people have been coming to the office since March of last year. But I've been coming every single day, and I still suit up, you know. And
yeah, I've always said if you dress the part, you are the part, right? You don't go to play baseball in a football uniform, right?
I like that.
In the game. It's sort of funny. Right after COVID hit, I was like, all right, we're going to be home. I showered every morning, got dressed, fully ready to go to work.
Yeah.
Because I got to get my head in the game. I can't come out in sweatpants and what some of the other were able to. This was just a Casey thing. Like, I got to be in the part. So I just love that you haven't wavered at all on that. And I was like, I'm wondering if Stephen A. is going to show up as sharply dressed or if he's going to have a t-shirt on.
Yeah,
so you did not disappoint me. So let's talk, man. It's been a while. Tell me over the past year, what's been going on and how have you been?
Well, we've been out. Personally, it's been great. I've been great. You know, I still take my 43 vitamins every day like a crazy person, but I stay healthy. And, you know, as I told you, I work 20 hours a day. Literally, I sleep maybe four hours a day.
Really? You're one of those. You can go with only 4 hours of sleep.
I think because everything in life is about math, right? At some point, mathematics.
True.
Coming from my background. So I just never felt that I wanted to sleep 8 hours because that's what 33% of your life. Right. So I just didn't want to do that. So I sleep 4 hours a day and I need to do it anyway in this business just to keep up with what's going on. So.
And you're able to function. I wish I could do that. Have you always been that way?
Yeah.
What a blessing.
Yeah. I just feel like, you know, I've always said that no matter where you work, you should try to find a passion for what you do every day. And some people work to live, some people live to work. When you work to live, it's budgetary in nature, which I understand. You have to feed your family, and that's important. But when you live to work, which I think you probably do as well, Casey.
Absolutely.
That means that you have a passion for what you do and who you work for. And you can't wait literally to get out of the shower every morning and to make your bed and do whatever you do every morning and start your day. And that's how I am.
Well, you know, you're one of those leaders that I've had the privilege of having some time with over the past years. And that you just have a really unique perspective about leadership. And I know the past year had to challenge every leader. And you could see those that were outstanding, they rose to the occasion. And those that were challenged maybe sort of withdrew. I know you attacked this past year with fury. Can you give me some things that maybe you did this past year that helped your team cope with these unprecedented times?
Well, some of the things that we did on a management level were I have a senior management team that consists of myself, the president of my company, who happens to be my son, Scott, who's been with me for 10 years. And then we have our chief marketing officer as our VP of capital markets, chief operating officer, our chief sales officer, and our chief financial officer. So we meet every Thursday. But due to COVID, we moved that up to 3 days a week as the issue started to escalate really a year ago, starting on March 12th. And, you know, we just felt that I've always felt that communication is the lubrication, right? So we felt that we needed to really be on top of everything going on and on a department level basis. And it really helped us just to communicate as to what each department needs and how to might navigate through the problems that we were having. And it really worked out very, very well. And of course, we, as every other company, we migrated towards having a lot of virtual meetings with all our managers, because we have a strictly a retail environment. We have a branch model that's typical of a lot of other companies, but I've always felt it's very important to really communicate with our division leaders. So we did a lot more virtual meetings and discussions. What I implemented also was a division mat. We have division managers who oversee sales managers.
Sure.
So I felt I personally wanted to be more proactive about what their challenges and opportunities were. So I created a division manager monthly roundtable where it was just the division managers, no one else, no other managers that would normally report up to them, just to listen and to create a venue for which they can talk about what's on their mind as it relates to, again, their challenges, opportunities that they have, that they're having challenges. That they're having issues with executing, as well as sharing their best practices. And that really added to the communication among all the other managers. And I think that helped, you know.
Are you going to maintain that through the next year, or is it?
Yeah, no, we still maintain that. I rolled out a loan officer roundtable, which is similar, where loan officers are just talking again about their challenges, about their opportunities, about their best practices among each other, where I am not involved in that. And the division manager roundtable, I'm directly involved. But that's moderated by my business development manager, and it really gives them an opportunity to talk about, you know, anything associated with their business. I'm very involved with the loan offices. I really enjoy that part of the business. You may recall that I'm licensed, and I have 51 MLO licenses, and I still originate 20 to 25 loans a month, probably at least 8 to 10 million a month. So that really keeps me in touch with the manufacturing process and the assembly line. And as we had issues with COVID and, you know, all those direct issues that directly and indirectly impacted our business, being a loan officer, you really, which I am, and to a large degree, I just felt I was able to really stay in touch with what the loan officers were going through. I think that helped.
So I'm going to guess this past year that you had a really record year based on what the industry is doing at large, and you had capacity challenges.
Yeah, but you know, we were just talking about that today, that the number of employees, we did close to 2 billion, but then the number of employees really hadn't changed that much. You know, I mean, I think, you know, one of the issues that we were discussing on our senior management meetings, which I referenced before, was in the absence of physically being in the office, what challenges are they having as it relates to monitoring their productivity and efficiencies of the employees? You know, and our employees have just been so productive. We really had to expand some of the operational staff to handle the volume.
But sure. Other than
that, you know, which is not unlike many other companies, you know, underwriters, closers,
right,
managers, you know, operational staff. But they did an outstanding job, you know. And when COVID hit, I gave every employee three options. They can either come to work entirely, come back to the office entirely, I should say, or they could work partially from home and partially from the office, or they can work entirely from home. So I gave them each those three options, and some chose to come entirely back to the office that they normally would come to because they wanted to do that. Some felt that they wanted to be home 2 or 3 days a week, and two or three days they wanted to come to the office.
Sure.
And others just simply wanted to be home.
So, what do you think the future looks like? Right, for the industry at large?
As it relates to people returning to the office.
Let's talk about specifically the industry right now. Refinances have been obviously at an all-time high. Rates are shifting. We're going to be going into a purchase market. How long? What's your crystal ball? How long do you think this is low rate environment?
2021 is going to be another great year for the industry. Okay. I think a lot of the refinance. Interesting you bring that up, but I think a lot of that refinance business will decline. I think nationally anyway. But I think there's going to be at least 2.5 million households are going to be looking to purchase a home, even though inventory is really very much depleted. There are now more real estate agents than there are homes available to be sold. But we're very in tune with providing sales data to our salespeople in terms of their pipelines, their past pipelines and their current pipelines. So surprisingly, even though refinances were very strong, we spent a lot of time sharing with them data of their previous clients that they originally closed loans for prior to April 1st of 2020. So we gave them reports of the borrowers that they closed from their personal pipeline prior to April 1 of last year, that where the rates were greater than 3.5%. And they were so busy that I think even with the record year we had, we only got to maybe 15 to 18% of those. So we still have a great deal that we still need to market to. And our chief marketing officer, we set up this SMS text message program and whereby the borrowers that these loan officers close their loans for are getting text messages. There's still a lot of people out there that are above 5%, actually above 4%. Maybe they want to do a renovation loan. Maybe they want to do a cash out refinance.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe they want to change the term to a 15-year. But I don't think it's going to affect us that much in terms of the decline in refis, but we expect a decline. But we've always been very strong in the purchase money business, which I've always felt is lifeblood of the mortgage banking business is the purchase money business. And we're very much encouraging our loan officers to continue to maintain those relationships with their referral partners.
Absolutely. So, you know, Stephen, as I got to know you, you have so many great stories as to how you got where you are. And because it's just amazing to hear them. And I'd love for you to share, how did you stumble into the mortgage industry? Because nobody typically, or maybe your son did, but most of us veterans, the old guys, I'm calling myself old guys.
Yeah.
Had no intentionality of let's go get in the mortgage space because I didn't even know what it was.
Yes, that's a great question, and I love telling my story, which takes a long time. One of the things that we do here in the company, every month we have a meeting that my son and I conduct. And it's basically, it's a meeting where all the employees are invited to attend, virtually, obviously. And we talk about where we have been, where we are now, and where we are going. And when I meet people for the first time, that's how I've always operated my business. I sit down with them. I don't want to know about their business model. I really want to know about them as a person, where they have been in their personal and business life, where they are now in their business and personal life, and where they are going in their business and personal life. And the reason I start off the conversation that way is because I tell them where I have been in my business and personal life. I just share everything, where I am now and where I am going. And I, just like you just said, Casey, and I tell them that no one wakes up one day and they say they want to be a loan officer. You know, I wasn't sitting around, after I graduated high school and said to myself, self, I think I want to be a loan officer.
Hey, Ken, I'm going to add something to that. And our kids are like, I don't want to do that job, Mom. Right? So, but here you are, your son's president.
Yeah, so, and I tell everybody, my story is no different. I didn't wake up one day You know, I was a school teacher. My story is on our website. But, you know, I was a school teacher. My son was born in 1978. At that time, I told my wife and I agreed that she should stay home. And I've always felt a man has to do what a man has to do. So I did whatever I could do. I was teaching school, making about $8,000 a year, $10,000 a year. I was pursuing my doctorate in mathematics because I wanted to become a principal, and you had to have a PhD to become a principal on Long Island. And so I started, I sold Amway, you know, those Amway cleaning products.
Oh my God. I could see you doing that.
And sort of Shackley vitamins, you know, anything I can do. And then I went to refinance my house in 1980, sat down with the loan officer. She introduced me to the manager. He offered me 12 and a half basis points. At that time, the average loan size was $100,000. And even though I taught math, I said to him, that sounds great, but can you explain one thing to me? What is a basis point? I had no idea.
That is awesome. Awesome.
So my average loan size was about $100,000. If I closed the loan, I made $125, but I didn't receive any training. So he gave me the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac seller servicer guides. I read them in 1 week. I came back and I said, okay, this is something I want to do. I would like to do. And
oh my God.
Because I didn't receive any training, my first 24 deals I took never closed. I made $0. I thought my wife then was going to stick a fork in each eye, you know. And but then I started to really learn the business. And needless to say, by 1986, I was closing 30 loans a month myself. And I left teaching. I gave up my retirement and my benefits. And I opened up a mortgage brokerage shop in Queens. And then on February 17th, 1994, I opened up U.S. Mortgage as it is today. So we just passed our 27th year, and we've got a great team. Many of my people have been with me the entire 27 years. It's amazing. They, you know, I've always be one of our core values is to seek longevity, you know, and we try to stress that core value. And, you know, it's my goal as a owner of a company has always been to serve as an employer for life. And and that's important to me that, you know, I reflect on what could I have done better to retain that employee. So that's the quick version of my story. I mean, I can go on and on, but.
Oh my gosh. So I love where you said, where have you been? Where are you? And where are you going?
Right.
Where are you going? Where are you taking U.S. Mortgage?
Well, where we're taking it now is that we are really very much focusing on artificial intelligence and really automating the entire process. We really felt the need for it. You know, we really, you know, as far, and my son is, Scott is really leading that charge. He's doing a great job with that, Scott. And, but on our model is strictly retail, boots to the street, even though we have a very successful and profitable and productive division, consumer direct division in Horsham, Pennsylvania. Right. And they do an outstanding job with dealing with the consumer direct platform. But our goal is to continue to recruit. We created our own recruiting division within the company, not unlike what other recruiters / headhunters have. So we created our own, and we are really pursuing that with recruiting. I'm very much involved in the recruiting side, whether it's loan officers within our branches or new opportunities, because the company, we're licensed in 48 states. And, you know, so we feel that there's still great opportunities and for people to join our company, and we continue to look for opportunities on the recruitment side and so on.
Sure. So if you were talking to a loan officer today, one of your loan officers, and they said, Stephen A., I would love to the best advice to be successful. What are the top three things you would tell them?
the best advice to be successful as a loan officer?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a great question too. Well, the first piece of advice is to look, to sit with me and learn what I call the five Milner commandments of loan origination. And the five, and they are, as far as I'm concerned, there's five main tasks that a loan officer needs to become a student of. That would be to learn how to sell, how to qualify, how to take a complete application, how to follow up with your pipeline, and how to market yourself.
Mm.
And my advice to loan officers is that they have to really drill down on where their weak strengths and weaknesses are.
Mm-hmm.
Because in my experience, very few loan officers can do all those five things very well. Sell, qualify, take an application, pipeline follow-up, and market themselves.
Mm.
And I tell them that I've seen loan officers who are very charismatic. They like to talk to people, and they're good at selling and marketing, but they're not technicians.
Mm-hmm.
They're weak in qualifying.
Right.
As a trainer, you could relate to this, right? They're weak in taking an application completely. They're weak in follow-up. And I try to tell them that that application must tell a story. It's like a novel. And they have to understand that when that novel hits the underwriter's desk, that underwriter does not have the luxury of having to have sat with the borrower at the kitchen table and listen to their story. So that application has to be a totally complete application. Then I met those loan officers, and I tell loan officers this, that I met loan officers who are great technicians. They become a true student of how to qualify, how to take an application, and how to follow up with their pipeline. But they're not charismatic.
They're not.
They have what I call reluctance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't feel comfortable in dealing with their referral partners, and they don't really have the ability or even the willingness to market themselves, you know. So I try to, and talking to them, I try to impress upon them to try to ascertain where is their weakness. And if they can ascertain that, then they need to fill that gap with maybe an assistant of some type, a loan officer assistant or a processing assistant, someone who can help them with those, to fill those weaknesses that they have. And that's the first thing when I speak to a loan officer, whether they're experienced or whether they're not, I try them. And I'm very much willing to sit with them and go through sort of a syllabus, if you will, of what those five Milner commandments are.
So as an executive leader today, I'm going to guess, since we're both in that same boat, I've learned a lot. I've made more mistakes than I've done things right. But as I always say, if you don't learn from your mistakes, then you truly can't lead, right? You have to know that you're imperfect. What lessons have you learned as a leader that has made you a better leader today?
Well, I think one of my favorite quotes is from Salvatore Dali, who said, "So little of what could happen does happen. So little of what could happen does happen." And what does that mean? To me, that means that you create a plan and you must stay focused on the fulfillment of that plan. And you can, in this business, as you know, you can become very distracted, right?
Mm-hmm.
Try to do too many things at once. So I try to very much focus on completing the task. And I've always believed, as I said before, in persistence overcomes resistance all the time. And it's something that people have to work on, you know, and I just think that they have to realize that a person who made it to the top of the mountain was not dropped there, you know.
They climbed their way up. They didn't get dropped out of a helicopter.
And a tree doesn't, you know, grow straight to the sun, right? That's just the way it is. And, you know, and the idea is to continue to you lay out your plan, create a process to reach the final objective, But I just find that many people are distracted and they lose focus. You must stay focused on what the initiative is. And that's what I try to exude and explain to everyone, even on the senior managers. You know, I just try to provide that leadership to them to really focus on what the objective is. And I always say, if you fail to plan, you are planning to fail, right? So
now I know a little data point that a lot of people listening in will not know, and that is you wrote a book of Milnerisms. Because you have an amazing way to bring words to the page that have some aha moments, is what I would say. So I would love to know, do you have a favorite top three Milnerisms that you tend to get the biggest reaction from?
Well, one of them was the one I just, the Salvador Dali one. I took that one, you know, so little what could happen does happen. I mean, that's huge, I think. And
that just told me not to worry. Don't get distracted. Right. Just stay focused. Stay on course.
Well, some of my favorites are live life as long as you have life to live. Give love as long as you have love to give. And always remember that life is not about having what you want. It is about wanting what you have got. Life is not about having what you want. It's about wanting what you've got, because we will never have what we want. That's just the way it is. I just see that all the time, you know, to me, life is about having what you want.
So interesting, because on this journey in my life.
Not about having what you want. It's about wanting what you've got. Yeah.
It's been really interesting to me on this journey. I'm always looking for the pursuit, right? I'm going after. And I'm like, am I really enjoying the journey along the way to pursuit?
Good point, right?
And in the journey is what life is. It's not the destination. It's the process of getting there. Because once you're there, then you move the goalpost and you're going for the next one. So do we really, every single moment of every day, relish the life that we have? Because I think you would probably agree the mortgage industry has been really good to us.
Yeah.
And you think about the last year of all the hospitality industry, the service industry, and what's happened to industries and businesses around the world. And yet we're having banner years. Are we really relishing and praising and being grateful and feeling that blessed and enjoying it as opposed to stressing it? And I love your quote. So little of what could happen does happen. So all the worry doesn't do anything to add to my life. It's stay focused, stay the course, and be great stewards of the gifts we've gotten. And you've been one of those men that I've had the privilege of getting some time again with, where you have been blessed and you're blessing others. And when I think of leaders, and I think time with Stephen A means time of somebody pouring into someone else's life to make them better. Yeah. And I adore what you said. Seek longevity and be that employer for life. And if you put that out there as an employer, and I'm thinking, by the way, you just taught me, right? Employer for life. What does that look like?
Right. Good point. Yeah.
How do we make ourselves the employer that no one ever wants to leave? I just happened to be having a team meeting coming up and you just gave me some insight and I appreciate that. And again, Stephen A is always going to pour into other people's lives.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be sensitive to your employee needs. I mean, they're human beings. And, you know, just because I sit in my CEO pedestal doesn't mean I can't try to speak to my employees and really be sensitive and understanding of what they're going through personally, professionally. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's important for a leader, you know, that's one of the recommendations I would make to anyone who's in a leadership position, that have humility, have understanding, and really, and that contributes to becoming, to serve as an employer for life, right? I think people are very appreciative of that. I'm very, you know, I'm constantly emailing and congratulating people on their annual work anniversaries and their birthdays. I know everyone's birthday. I know everyone's work anniversary. And you can't believe some of the comments. Thank you so much for. You know, we send them a $25 gift card or whatever it is, you know, just
sure.
make their day, you know, and it works for, it's worked for me, you know, and you just have to be understanding of what their needs are. And I think that's sometimes is missing from leadership.
You know, I think it was missing with me early on in my career, realizing I just trying to climb the ladder and, you know, realizing I was going to be lonely at the top if I didn't climb it and bring people with me, if you will. And God had gifted me a certain way and I had blinders on, and I had to learn over time to drop the blinders and bring and be engaging. And it's been an amazing journey for me. I have a great team, but when I get to spend time with executives like yourself who are so accomplished, I know that. I'll end with this question because I'd love for you to share. Who is the most influential person in your life that taught you to be who you are today? And why?
I don't have anyone specific. I do a lot of reading, so I'm always taking pieces from different things that I read. Because I've always felt that the whole is the sum of the parts.
Sure.
I think probably, I know it sounds kind of strange, but Aristotle was a very famous mathematician and philosopher. And one of my philosophies of running the company is what I just said. He believed in the mathematical theorem that the whole is equal to the sum of the parts. I've changed that to the point where I always say that the whole can be greater than the sum of the parts. And that's what we try to do here in the company. And I think about that every day, you know, and in terms of my goal as an employer, when I wake up every day, and I think it's probably yours as well, if I can be so bold, is to make the company better than the day before, whatever that is, right? I'm sure you think the same thing. What can you do better today? What can you do today to improve the company 24 hours ago, yesterday? But that's an interesting question, you know, and philosophers and people like Salvatore Dali. I mean, that one principle is so important to how we run our lives. And I must say also that my son, Scott, he's really had a tremendous influence on a different aspect of the business that I've had in the past. You know, I'm still a very traditional loan officer. He's very, you know, he's 43, he's going to be 43. And he's embraced the business. He joined the company in 2010 after being a very successful investment banker. I brought him on board as we implemented our nationwide expansion plan, and he's done outstanding. And I try to tell people that one thing you can be assured of is that I have no interest in selling or taking the chips off the table. And with Scott here, we're going to continue the legacy of US Mortgage for another 50 years. So it's pretty cool that we can get along, because you've heard horror stories about children.
Right.
Parents, right?
Right, right.
But we do an outstanding job getting along, and he's learned the business very well, and he's going to take the company to another level, I think. And I look up to him too in terms of some of the things he's done, because
outstanding.
He has you know, everything in life comes down to ability and willingness to do something, you know, and I think it's important to recognize, again, as I said before, where do you lack certain ability and where do you lack certain willingness? And it sort of becomes a balance.
It does. It's interesting when you think about, Independence Day and freedoms and your U.S. mortgage, and you think about the blessings of our country. And that we're still the land of the free.
Yeah.
Did you name U.S. Mortgage after specifically because of the USA?
Yeah. I really felt it was it really exemplified what I wanted to do. You know, I was the when I first opened the company in 1994, we were still a mortgage broker. And I think I was one of the first mortgage companies to become licensed by the state, New York State Banking Department, which is a major challenge in and of itself.
Right.
You know, and I was very proud when I got my license as an independent mortgage banker. And I just loved the name, you know, and I thought it would be great, and, you know, a wonderful name. And we created our slogan at that time, 1994, which was helping you make it home, which is still our mission statement.
I love that.
You know, and I have my philosophy on that too. You know, I always felt, not to get too philosophical, but, you know, during my career, there's certain things I stayed away from, like the subprime products in the late 90s and early 2000s, which ultimately mm-hmm. led to the Great Recession. And I understand that we wanted to, that the government wanted to increase home ownership, which I understand from at that time, 63% to 73%. And that led to creating a lot of the products that ultimately caused the Great Recession. I've always felt that everyone is entitled to a roof over their head, but not everyone is entitled to a mortgage. As a good leader of a mortgage company, you have to know to say no.
Sure.
You know, you have to realize that sometimes you're going to have to say no and advise that borrower to save their money, rent. And that's how our philosophy is throughout the United States, you know. I think it's a great name and it's a great brand. We have a great mission statement, you know, which is helping, simply being that everyone is entitled to a roof over their head, and our slogan, helping you make it home, it all fits in with the whole idea of home ownership.
I love your slogan, helping you make it home. And I love the fact that we're in an industry where we get to help with that American dream.
Yeah.
And we get to do it in a responsible, loving, caring way, not only for the homeowner, but for the employees that we all employ today. Exactly. And so I'm going to remember, you know, where have you been? Where are you today? And where are you going? So
right.
With that, let me just say thank you for the little time we've had together. I am going to definitely walk away with seeking longevity for my employees. I want to be the employer for life, which means we have to grow. We have to give them opportunity to advance. You know, you only got three options in a business, you know, pull back, stay the same, or grow.
Yeah.
And very few people want to work for the company that's stagnant or pulling back. They want to go with the ones that grow. And so selfishly, I need to grow, so I can have those employees for life.
And communication, I always say, is the lubrication.
Yes, it is, right?
You know, and it's a matter of just communicating, taking the time to communicate with your employees. Mm. I get it. It's challenging sometimes when you're sitting at your desk and I'm sitting at my desk, but you have to try to find the time to do that. So
I got
to
ask this final question because I'm curious. Communication is the lubrication. Relationships are the foundation for everything, right? For a great company employer, because they got to trust us, and relationships are built on trust. Have you been compromised or challenged knowing that almost everything's remote, and how have you adapted to that, if at all?
Based on all of the aforementioned, as you can see,
sure,
I really enjoy personal interaction with my
right. I want to hug people. I want to be in the same room with them. And if that's challenging me right now,
because
initially it was okay. We were all in the same boat, but now it's like, all right, I just need to get in the same room with you.
Yeah. 1000%, Casey. I want to, prior to March of last year, I would do a lot of traveling to all our branches. The first to go with a loan officer to help him do an open house or do a lunch and learn or to do a happy hour, you know, and I would travel to all over the country to be with them, to listen to what their challenges are. What opportunities are they having trouble implementing? You know, share with me your best practices. And it's important, I think, as leaders, you and I together, to be able to communicate and understand that. And one of the ramifications of COVID is that has diminished our ability to do that, right? Sure. And even though we have Zoom and we have the virtual, we have the WebEx and the GoToMeetings, it's not the same. What I'm finding, which I think is a commonality, is that people are, they're distracted during these meetings. They're doing the emails, they're texting, you know.
Two screens, phone, yeah.
Thing, you know. Even in my meetings, when we did have meetings in the conference room, I would have a little post-it saying cell phones are prohibited, you know, right. for that 1 or 1.5 hours, you can put your cell phone away and you'll get to your emails later on, you know, but it's all about communicating. Well, you know, and
that might be a new thing. Maybe we say, okay, all hands on deck, which means you got to put your hands in the camera, which means I know you're not moving things around.
That's an idea.
That's an idea.
Let me see your hands, you know. I'm sure you go through that. You know,
I used to say, if I've got your eyes, I've got your ears. Might need to be now. If I have your hands, I've got your eyes.
I like that. That's good. That's right. I got eyes, I got your ears. I like that one.
Yeah, there you go. That's good. Well, hey, you can put that in one of your Milnerisms. If you've got your eyes, I've got your ears. Right? Because you think about it. If you're not looking at me, you can't hear me because you're distracted. I need your eyes. So thank you so much for your time.
I'm going to write
that
down.
It's always a pleasure.
Can you email that to me? I don't want to be rude. Then write it down.
Yeah. I'll send that to you. If I've got your eyes, I've got your ears.
I'll put it in the book.
And in the Zoom world, it might be if I've got your hands and eyes, I've got your ears. So.
Yeah, that's so true, though. Oh, my goodness. I'm going to like
it. It is. Because, you know, you don't know what they're doing. And, you know, you could literally have stuff on the screen. But if you have their hands and they can't move them, then you know that they're focused on you.
Yeah.
So, all right. What a pleasure and a privilege it is. Spend some time with you. No, you're the best.
You're the best. Thanks so much.
God bless you. God bless you. Well, you have a great one. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to check back for new episodes of Inside the Mortgage Mind, a podcast by Zenix the Mortgage Academy. You can download our episodes wherever you love to listen to podcasts or on our website at zenix.com/InsideTheMortgageMind.